Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We now have this from the Associated Press, which is reporting that a source close to Governor Chris Christie says he has decided not to run for the presidency. Governor Christie has announced a 1 o'clock news conference for this afternoon. The greater world's media is beating a path to Trenton right now. If you launch, it's just, they're having a good laugh in the Christie camp, no matter what else is going on, right? That reporters from the UK and China and Los Angeles and everyone, even from New York, like, I have to go to Trenton? You couldn't do it in Secaucus or Newark, even New Brunswick? I have to go to Trenton? But that's where Governor Christie is expected to say at 1 o'clock this afternoon whether or not he's going to run for president in 2012. And I don't consider this definitive because it's just one unnamed source. But the AP is reporting that a source close to Governor Christie says he has decided not to run for the presidency. So there you go. We'll have more. We'll cover the news conference at 1 o'clock as well. By the way, on our politics website, it's afreecountry.org. There's a great feature by Free Country reporter Anna Sale on Ross Perot, the last great political insurgent who considered himself an independent. Some people were even starting to talk about Christie in this camp after he gave that speech on bipartisanship and compromise at the Reagan Library the other day. But there are lessons to be learned in 2011 from Ross Perot. So Ross Perot, the last great political insurgent, read that historical profile on itsafreecountry.org. Meanwhile, President Obama's big jobs bill may not get much traction in the Republican-controlled House, but it looks like they might break through gridlock on a different sort of jobs bill, one that's been in the works for about 5 years. The free trade agreements with Panama, Colombia, and South Korea, which were finally submitted to Congress yesterday after having been negotiated for the most part by the Bush administration, but held up because free trade is so contentious. Ever since NAFTA, talk about Ross, but do you remember when Ross Perot, by the way, debated Al Gore? Al Gore was already vice president, and Perot and Gore had a nationally televised debate on NAFTA, free trade, and whether it was good or bad for America. And Perot took the con side, that it was the giant sucking sound of jobs being sucked from the United States into Mexico. Anybody remember that? While Gore, with the Clinton administration, was defending free trade agreements. And it was really in that era that Americans really became divided over whether free trade unleashes the economy and creates jobs or steals jobs and ships them across our borders. So to talk about what's in these new deals and why we may see bipartisanship, both in favor and against them, I'm joined by Felicia Sanmez, Washington Post congressional reporter and lead author of Two Chambers, the Post's blog covering politics and policy on Capitol Hill, and Elizabeth Williamson, who's a reporter for The Wall Street Journal. So Elizabeth and Felicia, thanks so much for coming on today.
Hey, Brian. Thanks, Brian. Great to be with you.
Felicia, you first, these deals were negotiated during the Bush administration, and now President Obama wants them ratified?
Yes, and it worked out politically definitely to President Obama's favor. These are three deals that have been stalled for about 5 years. Most recently, the holdup over them has been over a program called Trade Adjustment Assistance, which is about a $1 billion program for workers whose jobs were displaced due to trade. So now they've come to an agreement on that. It looks like these bills might be passed as soon as next week here on Capitol Hill. And for the Obama administration, the benefits are twofold. They get to say that they're moving forward on these trade deals, which they say are going to boost exports by as much as $13 billion a year. And they also say that they will lead to the creation of tens of thousands of jobs. And the benefit of doing that now is at a time when they're not looking to spend more government money to boost job creation. These are a way of achieving that. And as you mentioned, there is bipartisan support up here, but there's also some bipartisan opposition.
So, Elizabeth, explain how this works. It sounds, from what Felicia just said, that there's an explicit acknowledgement that free trade agreements like these with Panama, Colombia, and South Korea actually do take jobs away from Americans, and so there would be a mechanism included to compensate them for that.
Yes, that's right. The Trade Adjustment Assistance Agreement, the bill, will provide some extended unemployment benefits and an extended health care provision for individuals who are displaced by globalization. The program has expanded over the years. It's a 50-year-old program, but this year it became sort of caught in the teeth of a broader budget fight in Congress that we've all heard so much about. And it became a sticking point, the latest in getting these trade agreements over the bar. They will not pass, by the way, next week. There will be a House vote by the 13th, probably the week of October 10th, and then they're expected to pass the Senate by the end of October.
How do they measure which workers are eligible for these extended unemployment benefits and other things? How do they define whose job went away as a result of globalization, Elizabeth?
That criteria has changed over the years. It used to be you had to prove that your job went away as a direct result of a free trade agreement with another nation. That's been relaxed over time. And now if your job has gone, for example, your manufacturer has moved to China and you've lost your manufacturing job, you're eligible for these benefits.
So, Felicia, you said there will be bipartisan support. There'll be bipartisan opposition. Does the Tea Party faction support free trade?
They're sort of the wild card in the whole passage of these trade bills. Among supporters, you've got, of course, the Obama administration has been pushing real hard for these, and the congressional Republican leadership has been on board for these. On the other hand, you've got some congressional Democrats who are opposed to this and organized labor because, as you mentioned, there's the whole worry of outsourcing. And then the Tea Party members are interesting because a lot of them haven't made up their minds yet on this. During the campaign, we saw there was a sort of protectionist streak among a lot of the Tea Party supporters and Tea Party-backed candidates. Some of those have brought that with them here up to Capitol Hill, and they express a little more skepticism about the job-creating benefits of these trade deals compared with some of the more traditional pro-business congressional Republicans. So there's about 87 new members in the House Republican freshman class. Those are going to be the ones that the leadership will have to be lobbying hard among over these next couple of weeks.
We don't have a lot of time for phone calls in this segment, but I wonder if anybody's listening right now who either thinks that you lost your job directly as a result of globalization, or if you think your job was created directly as a result of globalization. We don't expect every caller to answer the question as to whether this is a net positive or net minus for the country, but do you think your job was lost because of a free trade agreement? Do you think your job was created because barriers came down country to country? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Love to hear real quickly from anybody who considers yourself in either of those categories. Call right up, you'll get right on. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. As we talk about these new free trade agreements stuck for 5 years that look like they'll finally get approved with Panama, Colombia, and South Korea. Talking about them with Elizabeth Williamson, Wall Street Journal reporter, and Felicia Sanmez, who covers Capitol Hill for The Washington Post. Elizabeth, are these deals similarly controversial in Panama, Colombia, and South Korea?
Not really, Brian. Let me just address one thing on the Tea Party as well. Of those 87 freshmen, they did submit a letter earlier this year to the White House showing that more than 60 of them were in support of these free trade agreements. So while there will be some protest by union-backed Democrats and perhaps some budget hawks within the party, we don't really anticipate that there's going to be an enormous hue and cry from the Tea Party on these agreements.
That's what I would have guessed, because I think Tea Party philosophy is they don't want government telling money what it can do.
Well, and the other part of it is what you'll get is some objection to the TAA program, because
this was killed earlier this year by that same element. You know, these are the budget hawks. These are the people who don't want additional government spending. And that's what sort of nailed the TAA bill earlier this year.
I see. In other words,
this is a scaled back version that they're going to vote on now.
These extended benefits for people who do lose their jobs to globalization, that's the part that the Tea Party might object to.
I think that's going to be the tougher fight. And that's why the Republican leadership in the House has been more reluctant to bring that forward. And they wanted a separate vote on that, on its merits.
So, Felicia, how did they water that part down?
They agreed to a compromise over a couple of weeks of negotiating among the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, the Senate Finance Committee chairman, and some representatives from the White House. They basically scaled back some of the benefits that would be included in this extension of TAA. So that may be enough to secure the support of these conservative Tea Party-backed Republicans. It may not be, though, especially in this current environment where you're just coming after this massive debt ceiling fight up here that was incredibly divisive. You're not seeing a lot of appetite among members of either party to increase spending. So, as Elizabeth mentioned, the TAA is definitely going to be the tougher fight of these two.
Do you know what got knocked out? What benefits won't workers displaced by the free trade agreements get in order to satisfy the Tea Party?
Jump in, Elizabeth, if you like, but I believe it's the unemployment benefits are going to be scaled back a little bit.
I can say specifically the unemployment benefits that regular Americans across the board receive is a maximum of 99 weeks. Under TAA, people who qualify for that receive currently 156 weeks of paid unemployment benefits. The scaled-back version provides for 130 weeks. It also provides for these people got an opportunity to write off the cost of their health care coverage while they're unemployed. It used to be 80% they could write off. Now it's 72.5. So what sounds like a marginal difference, actually, when you add it up among the 250,000 people who receive these benefits, it's a quite substantial cost savings. So, yeah, that's what they did to scale it back.
Carly in Hawthorne, you have your job because of globalization, you think?
Yes, I do. I mix paint for cars, and most of our supplies are coming from Japan. Actually, right now it's, you know, under because of the bad tsunami right now, so we're not doing too good. But, you know, if it wasn't for them and it wasn't for those products, we couldn't make paint and we couldn't, you know, get them to the auto body shop so they could make cars. And most of the pearls and most of all the ingredients come from Japan. It's a big, they're a big distributor for paint over here.
Thank you very much, and good luck. Mike in Deer Park, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mike. You lost the job?
Brian. Yeah, Brian. I work with IBM Computers Mainframes, and prior to the NAFTA agreement, we used to be able to get a job without a problem, or at least, you know, a small amount of search. As of right now, with major corporations sending all the intellectual positions overseas for $2,000 and $3,000 a year, it makes it almost impossible to make a living here in the United States to support a family.
Thank you very much. And Jennifer in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. As soon as I can get my... Actually, Debbie, could you put Jennifer on line two up for me? Somehow I couldn't get over there. Jennifer, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, this is Jennifer, and I publish a magazine called American Made Magazine online. And I'd like to know if you could ask the callers to be a little more specific about the industries that will benefit versus the industries that may see a deficit in jobs. And I have one other comment about the unemployment and extensions. You know, Brian, if you think about the salaries of people, that what they make in manufacturing, and that what the maximum amount of unemployment is $400 a week, and that they would then have to write off their COBRA for health insurance in this company, in this country, that can cost up to $800 a month. How would they even begin to afford to pay for their health insurance if they're losing their jobs? So if there is truly a benefit of increasing jobs for average Americans, and this isn't intellectual property licensing, and this isn't high technology manufacturing, but really specific industries, I think the general public needs to know what are those industries,
right,
and do we have a trained population that will be able to perform those jobs?
So since you put out American Made Magazine, can you say specifically what are some of the industries that may gain or lose jobs from these new free trade agreements that look like they're going to be approved with Panama, Colombia, and South Korea?
It's a new initiative for my last year of school in interdisciplinary communications, and I've tweeted this question on LinkedIn and also, you know, tweeted it and put it on a Facebook page because I don't know enough about the whole scope. I come from the consumer products licensing industry and know that the general, you know, billion-dollar industry of average consumer products that we consume in America are not made in this country. Shoes, hats, T-shirts, you know, home goods, furniture,
right.
All of those industries we saw shattered through North American trade. And to know what are the benefiting industries of opening trade with Panama, South Korea, and Colombia.
Thank you very much. So, Felicia, what are supposed to be the benefiting industries in particular, do they say?
Yeah, well, the main industries that will benefit from the Korea deal, which is the largest of the three, it encompasses mainly farm exports, the chemical, car industries are going to be huge beneficiaries of this, and pharmaceutical companies as well. So it's a pretty broad mix there. But I think to the caller's point, I mean, this is something that when it comes to the politics of this and how the White House is going to either benefit or not from this, a lot of the worries that caller expressed are ones that organized labor and other members of the Democratic base are expressing. There will be a rally up here on Capitol Hill today with a lot of labor groups and a couple of Democratic members. So depending on how these three trade deals turn out in the end and if the benefits of job creation are seen over the next 14 months or so, that could have a big impact on the president's political fortunes next November.
And so, Elizabeth, last thing, are there political considerations that are, you know, beside the economic ones that are in play here? Because most listeners will hear that these are free trade agreements with Panama, Colombia, and South Korea, and they'll think, well, this is not, you know, China and India. These are not the biggest economies in the world that are going to make or break a lot of American jobs, and they may think, well, gosh, we have this other relationship with Colombia where we're in a drug war with them and other things like that.
The political considerations here are, what people are going to hear are, well, on the Korea part, they've pulled this, and most Americans do favor a stronger relationship with Korea because they see that as a counterweight against China in that region. On the winners and losers here, I mean, this is where Americans divide. Most Americans believe that free open markets and free trade are a good thing. If you ask them that question, they'll support it in the abstract.
Mm-hmm.
But they always say that free trade agreements benefit the other guy. The other nation always wins. And so that's the kind of dichotomy that people are trying to sell these deals on Capitol Hill will be facing. The other thing is you can appeal by individual members. The big beneficiary by far of these agreements, particularly the Korean one because it's so big, it's $11 billion of the $13 billion in new exports that's promised by these three agreements, is the agricultural sector. So it's corn, it's grain, it's meats, it's fruit, it's vegetables. So those are the members from those states where that's the biggest part of that state's production and its economy are going to be natural supporters of this agreement. The losers are the textile industry, the electronics industry, the computer makers. Those people will obviously not support this agreement. And you can already see them dividing along these lines.
Wall Street Journal reporter Elizabeth Williamson and Washington Post congressional correspondent Felicia Somnez, who contributes the lead author of the Two Chambers Capitol Hill blog with the Washington Post. Thank you both very much for talking to us. Really interesting about these three free trade agreements that most people hadn't heard much about. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we'll look into one of America's biggest medical device failures in years, affecting some of the many people who have gotten metal on metal artificial hips. Stay tuned.